morning, everyone, and welcome to Conversations with Lulu. My name is Lulu Khazan. I'm an entrepreneur living in Dubai. I'm an investor, a mother, and your host. My guest today is someone very special to me, Binod Shankar, Mr. Shankar. He is a corporate veteran. He's an entrepreneur. He's a podcast host. He's an angel investor. He's a cyclist. He's a mountaineer and a dear friend whom I've known for a decade. Apart from his distinguished career in finance, which you can read about in our show notes, Binod co-founded Genesis Training Institute in 2009 and grew it to a regional training powerhouse, which eventually got acquired in 2017 by Kaplan Inc., the US-based training and publishing company. Since then, Binod has done extensive training to become an executive coach. Today, Binod mentors young finance enthusiasts via his podcast, The Real Finance Mentor. Binod is a writer, a speaker, and a regular guest on CNBC Arabia as an expert on financial markets. Some of his more noticeable achievements are, of course, he was my CFA level one coach, and he fell asleep when he was meant to meet me for a 6 a.m. run. Mr. Shankar, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Yes, I thought you would forget about my sleeping in the morning. That was like 9 years ago, Lulu. How do you keep these things in mind?
I don't forget. I don't forget such things. Waking up early in the morning for a 6 a.m. run is already an achievement, you know. So to be stood up is something I won't forget.
So I owe you this podcast anyway. And thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. So Binod, you've been, you're a mentor. You're someone that a lot of people seek advice from as a coach and also as a finance expert. And I always wonder, what inspires you? What keeps you going?
Well, that's a very interesting question. Let me think about
that. Maybe we shouldn't start with that. Start with something else.
No, that's the real rocker of a question, right? What inspires me? I mean, So these days, I think post corporate life, post entrepreneurship, and looking for my next venture. So I think what really inspires me is, I know it's going to sound a bit cheesy, but it's like making an impact, making a positive impact, spreading awareness. That's really what inspires me a lot. And I think, what can I do or say that will transform careers or lives in a meaningful way? So hence the podcast, and we can talk about that later, but that is the main driver for the podcast. Yeah.
Why did you call it The Real Finance Mentor?
Well, there was a lot of debate on this name. Trust me. I mean, there was a lot of back and forth. What should we call it? Should it be short, snappy, meaningful, impactful? And then someone said, listen, you are real. There's something about you that's authentic. You're not fake. You say it as it is. Okay. But then you're not talking about everything. You're not talking about life as a whole, or relationships. I don't think anyone should come to me for relationship advice anyway. but what you're good at and what you can talk about is careers and finance and mentoring people in finance careers. So we came with the name The Real Finance Mentor, not finance as an investing or stock markets, Lulu, not that kind of finance, but as in, if you want a career in finance, CFA, CPA, MBA, whatever, then maybe this guy is the right guy to come to. Not maybe, he's the right guy to come to.
You started your career in India, right? You worked your way up the corporate ladder. And you did it for quite some time, right?
Probably about 17 years. That's a long time.
That's a long time. Yeah. And then one day, then what happened?
Actually, something happened. It wasn't a slow transformation. It was 2008, 2009. The market wasn't good. I was in the senior position as executive director of finance in a big listed company. And it was a stressful environment and very political and very toxic. And I didn't have much freedom or independence. You think that as a director of a company, you would have some kind of leeway. This is April 2009. I still remember April 2009, 11 years ago. I'm sitting in my corner office in the skyscraper at night, probably about 9 p.m. Everyone has left the office. I'm the only one. all the lights are switched off. I still remember it like, you know, like it's like a movie. I'm looking at the traffic below and I'm thinking, what the hell am I doing here? You know, this is like, this is like the Eureka moment, Lulu. Seriously, I'm not kidding. I was like, I don't need the salary. I don't have any obligations. I don't have wife or kids or, you know, college expenses, blah, blah, blah. So all I'm doing it is basically to satisfy my ego and to show that to others that, wow, you know, I have this title and salary in a fancy company. But internally, I was bleeding. Internally, it was meaningless.
How old were you?
I was 40 then. I was about to turn 40.
Wow.
It's wow. 1 month. You know, yeah, exactly. Wow. And they say you have this midlife crisis, right? Or middle-age crisis. Yeah. And I wasn't planning for it. I had read about it. It just hit me like a freight train. 1 month so before my
you didn't buy a Carrera, you just thought, you know.
No, I didn't buy a Porsche or get myself a blonde girlfriend or anything like that, right? Another thing happened. I took the easy way out, I quit my job.
But you know what? That's terrifying, because usually by 40 it's not easy, right? You're not young, quote unquote, to switch careers. You're holding on with your with your arms and legs, right? You don't want to let go, and it's difficult to find another job. So you're like, no, I'm out.
Well, at 40, normally most people, the average human being, has two kids, a mortgage, a house, and needs a job to pay for all this, right? Yes. And a husband or wife. I mean,
I'm that person at the moment.
Are you saying you're 40? I mean, is that a clue?
I'm way younger than that, but yeah.
Okay, let's keep it way younger. Let's keep it vague. So going back to, because interestingly, you asked me this. I mean, so there was a push and a pull, Lulu. The push was what I told you about, the company, the boss, and, you know. The pull was the fact that I love teaching. I've been teaching for some time, CFA, in Dubai, part-time. And then I called one of my business partners that same night in April 2009, someone I really trusted, and even now he's very close to me. And I said, listen, this is the situation. What should I do? He said, look, you love teaching. You're brilliant at it. There is already an operation going on in Dubai, part-time. Why don't you just come and take over? And trust me, it was like when you're imprisoned for long and you're wearing chains, and suddenly someone comes and unlocks it. I swear, that night, 11 o'clock sometime, that was the feeling I had. Which means next day morning, my mind was so clear. I took my BlackBerry, because then we had BlackBerries, right? And my access card, and went to this meet HR director and gave it back to him and said, that's it. And he was shocked, because no one expected me to leave just after 4 months on the job. Just after 4 months, it was just, you know. But shows how much of bullshit I had been taking for 17 years, maybe. I'd just been accumulating and building up, and then boom, you know. So I served a 1 month notice period, and I landed in Dubai in May, about 2 days before my birthday. And the first class we launched, the revision class we launched for CFA, was on my birthday. And I didn't even have an apartment. I had no house. I was living out of my suitcase in a hotel. And we had our first CFA level one revision class in that hotel's ballroom. And I never looked back after that. That was the genesis of Genesis, in a way, or, you know, the beginning of everything.
And when you started over, what did you have, like a long-term plan that this is going to be one day, you know, acquired by this like massive company, or were you just doing it for fun, like, or as a passion?
You know, I would love to lie and tell you that I had this ambition to grow and, you know, grow across geographies and revenue and sell to Kaplan or peers, nothing like that. The feeling that I had was relief, that I was finally, and I was finally a free man. I didn't have to report to anyone. I didn't have to work for anyone. I didn't have to get up in the morning at 9 a.m. and show my face. I didn't have to attend meetings because I had to. And that was the feeling that I had. There was no long-range plan as to this is how we exit from, you know, whatever this, who we sell it to, nothing. You know, it's like oxygen, you know,
you loved it, right? You loved it. I mean, I've experienced you as a teacher. I mean, I went into You know, I walked into Genesis Institute one day in 2010.
This was in Knowledge Village, by the way, the same place.
It
was a bigger office, the second office. Yeah, the second office we had.
Yes, you had an office where at the time, exactly when I walked in, and I'm like, okay, I have to pay 4,000 dirhams to these guys, and they're going to help me pass the CFA level one exam. And I walk into Genesis and I meet you, and then you tell me, Lulu, the CFA is not for everyone.
This is what I tell everyone, by the way. I said, listen, be very careful before you make up your mind. You know, choose wisely.
I know. Yeah. But I'm a stubborn person, I think.
Yeah, you are. Know? Trust me, you are. Yeah.
and honestly, I think, I walked in really with very, very basic knowledge. Your teaching, you know, the way you did it, how you simplified things. I passed the damn exam. It was like one of my proudest achievements, probably to date.
The first attempt, you smashed it in the first attempt.
First attempt,
June 2011, if I'm not mistaken.
2011, June 2011. And then I stopped because I decided to start a business.
Yeah, but it showed me something about you, with that this girl is bloody minded. You know, if she puts her mind to something, she'll do it.
Honestly, I swear it was an amazing achievement. But I have to say, it's because, again, you were a great teacher. Right. And you coached us, you used to WhatsApp us. And it wasn't only like the technical stuff. It was also the mental. It was also the mindset, that we can do it and all of that. And
actually, I enjoyed the whole process. I wasn't doing it because it was an obligation. I wasn't doing it because I loved it. It's like these guys have put themselves in my hands. Right. It's almost like you've trusted me to help you pass. So I can't let you down. So I got to push.
So how many students have you taught?
Wow, I haven't kept an exact tally, but probably from over the last 12 years, I'm thinking about 4,000, easily 4,000 across CFA, CMA, executive education, finance for non-finance managers. So a lot of courses we used to run, right?
So you started off with CFA only, and then you added all of these.
Exactly, we slowly added adjacent courses. CFA level one, then level two, then level three, then CMA. But then we didn't diversify too much. We just stuck to our basic stuff, which is finance and accounting exam prep training, right?
And you didn't feel tempted to add more courses and become like a training, like a general training?
Oh yeah, we were tempted. I mean, seriously, because everyone was doing it, right? Adding soft skills and everything. But then we didn't have the bandwidth and we didn't have the expertise. One thing that people, the main reason people came to us, Lulu, was they trusted us, right? That's how you came to us. I mean, someone must have told you that these guys are good in CFA prep.
Yes.
And we didn't want to destroy that reputation by going and screwing up in some new area which is not familiar to us. And that's what a lot of people do, by the way. They diversify too much too fast. So I think, we stuck to what we knew. But we got very, very good at it, CFA prep. I think if you do anything long enough and if you do it with passion, you can be amazing at it.
That's very true. But then you sold, right?
Then in 2017, Kaplan Inc. from the US came knocking and they wanted a presence in the Middle East. They loved the brand. They loved the market. And they loved the DNA of Genesis, as in, well, this is two guys basically out there, two expats, setting this new trend in exam prep, CFA exam prep, and generally in financial education. So they liked that. They liked our clients. We had a few big clients by then when they came to us.
Yeah.
So we thought about it and said, maybe it's time to, it's time to exit, maybe.
Just like that?
No. It wasn't. nothing important in life, I think, happens just like that. So the question you're asking is why. I know. First of all, it was 8 years. It had been 8 years since we have been running the company, right? And 8 years is a long while. It's quite stressful. And you spend 13, 14, 15 hours and you fly around the region, But that was the main reason. The main reason was that competition was coming in and competition with the brands was coming in, right, Lulu? You had big multinational brands coming in. So we had to have a powerful brand. Now, Genesis was a well-known brand in the exam prep financial training space. But if I went to a big company and said, we want to train your guys for non-exam financial stuff or non-exam technical stuff or soft skills or whatever, they would say, A, you're not a brand, and B, you don't think you're credible enough. That's one reason, the brand. Secondly, was the products. So we had CFA, CMA, financial modeling, we still do, or Kaplan Genesis still does, and some few other courses. But we had a very limited product range. So an HR manager, L&D manager in a company wants to engage with a training provider that ideally provides the maximum range of products, right? So that she or he deals with a few training providers.
Why?
I couldn't promise that. Well,
if you're an expert in your field, why do you feel that a company might want to?
Well, from their point of view, from the HR manager's point of view, the risk of their risk, right? What they don't want to lose their job by hiring a poor quality training provider. So the way they take their bets is we will go with a well-known brand, which we hope is also a high quality provider. It doesn't always work out that way. I don't want to name brands, but a lot of brands that change used to charge like $8,000 per day, $5,000 per day, but training quality was average. Anyway, but for HR managers, it made sense because, hey, good brand, big brand, they are in UK, US, whatever, let's go with them. So we used to lose out because of that, purely because of brand perception, not because of quality. We were high quality. So one was a brand. Second was the product range. Third was the people. Because Kaplan had a lot of good people in UK and US, right? Australia, Hong Kong. And they were very good in non-finance stuff, right? They were good in wealth management training or leadership training. So I said, wow, that's another good reason, right? So if you want to think about it, the brand, the people, the products, and they have some amazing products, you know, in terms of simulation, you know, like board games that really teach you finance for non-finance, you know? So very intuitive. People love games, right? People love gamification of learning and things like that. So I told, we had a discussion among the partners, say, you know what? It makes perfect sense. And of course, exit. Who doesn't want an exit, right? At some point, it's 8 years, you're slogging hard. So yeah, so the money, of course, had a role to play. But looking back, was it the only reason? No, I mean, in fact, I'm going to share something with you. This was in 2013. And someone approached us to acquire the company. And for whatever reason, it didn't happen. And I told one of my partners, I said, wow, it didn't happen, man. It went away, you know. And he turned to me, and I'll never forget what he said. He said, Vinod, the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow doesn't have to be always money. The pot of gold at the end of the rainbow can be something else for you. You don't always think about money. You think about other things like impact. And I said, shit, he's right. You know, why am I even getting worried or anxious about something which I never planned to anyway, because it was never part of my plan. And so it was very interesting. So even now I think about what he said, and I tell people, you know, in your career, don't always think about salaries or bonuses or money, because maybe you get a lot of other things from what you're doing, right? Networks or enjoyment or passion or purpose or whatever it is. So I was lucky, I think, to have partners like that who were more wiser than me. I think you need to have people who are smarter and wiser than you.
I used to stress every time something, you know, if I really wanted something and it didn't happen, or I was expecting a certain outcome and it didn't happen, I used to stress about it and be very upset about it. And then one day I decided that, you know what, whatever happens and everything happens for a reason. And since I've put this in my mind, I really do look at things this way. And to me, okay, I would like this to happen. I work on it. I seek it. But then if it doesn't happen, and if it's not something in my control, then, you know, whatever happens, happens. And and a lot of times, you know, I mean, for example, when 2008 the crisis happened, you know, I was working with Dubai Properties at the time. I was a corporate person, you know, just like you, and I was made redundant. And at the time it was, you know, a disaster. Like, I mean, what am I gonna do? I had just gotten married, and, you know, I have all these plans and so on. So it was really a blow. And then, but when you think like, okay, it happens, and now what? And then you start thinking, okay, let me think about starting a business, or let me think about doing some consulting. And then obviously opportunities open up. And then today I say losing that job was probably the best thing that's happened to me.
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
Because if I hadn't lost that job, I'd probably be, you know, I don't know, in some office doing the 9 to 6, some director maybe level, stress out, politics, pissed off.
Yes.
So actually, that was probably like one of the best things that happened.
The funny thing, Lulu, is that when something like that happens to you, at that point, you think it's probably the worst thing that happened.
Yeah.
Always. When you look
Absolutely.
Back, my leaving the company was probably the best thing that happened I ever done in my life, best decision I ever taken. But then even people are telling me, are you mad? You're leaving a high-paying job as executive director. I mean, seriously, some of them actually said, you're crazy. You're not going to make it. You know, a few. I wouldn't say some, a few. But I'm glad I followed my instincts or whatever, you know, and moved on.
So now you sold the business. I mean, in 2017, yes. It's been a few years now,
right.
And you've been going
unemployed.
Around.
Unemployed. That's what you said, right? Yesterday, you said you're unemployed. I said, yeah, it's true. Technically, I'm unemployed.
You're unemployed. Okay, you're seeking opportunities.
Seeking up. Maybe I should put on my LinkedIn, like seeking,
yes.
seeking
yes.
opportunities.
Open for
right?
business.
Open for business.
So you've trained to become a coach.
Yes. So basically, in 2015, which is about 5 years ago,
an executive
I got
coach.
Very,
sorry, just to be clarified.
Coach, yes. So I got very interested in psychology. I got interested in something called mental toughness because I used to see people going to CFA and failing, not like you, other people, right? And I always wonder why is it some people fail, some people pass, although their IQ levels seem the same. I was very mystified. So I kept asking. I attended many courses to find out more in 2012, 13, 14, but no course gave me the answer. And then I came across this course by the ILM, Institute of Learning and Management in the UK. And they had this comprehensive level 7 qualification in executive coaching and mentoring, which had, it was a thesis you had to write and you had to read hundreds of books and articles and you had to do practice coaching. It was I bit off more than I could chew, let's put it this way, I think. And I thought I'd finish in 1 year. It took 3 years to finish. So I finished, I think last year, 2019, February, I got the certificate qualification. But that opened my eyes to, my God, there's so much about psychology and personality types and testing and psychometrics, you know, and coaching effect. And there was so much out there that is mind blowing. So I did it. Now, at that point, I thought maybe I would become an executive coach, maybe. Then after I get in the qualification, I said, no, I don't want to.
Why?
Which is weird.
I was like going to ask you, like, is this what's next for you? I mean, apart from the podcast that you've started recently.
Well, a lot of people are executive coaches. A lot of people do good work in executive coaching and mentoring. And I might still do it. I'm not saying no. I think
you should. And I'll tell you why.
Okay,
you're like
go ahead.
You're very rigorous in what you do. And you're a professional, really. A lot of people sometimes, I feel, get into executive coaching because, for example, they've had like a corporate career and they've lost their job or something happened in their lives. And then there's, you know, they go on and they take the certificate and then they believe that they can help other people. And I don't think, honestly, it's the case. I mean, there's so many executive coaches out there today. And, you know, I would probably even say maybe like 50% of them are probably efficient and the others are just
probably bigger. I think you're being polite.
Yeah, probably, exactly. So, you're obviously, you're different. You have the corporate experience, you have the entrepreneurial experience, you're an expert in finance and accounting. You're also, I mean, you're on a personal level, you're like the super resilient dude who summited. I mean, how many mountains have you summited?
About 11 so far.
11. Okay, that's where you spend your money.
So you're absolutely right, and thank you for saying that. Really, makes me feel better on a Thursday morning. I'm going to go into the weekend now with this.
Yay!
That's it. She said it's live. If people are going to hear it, that's it. Thank you so much. I love you for that. But the reason, Lulu, is it's far more trickier than that, and I think I made a mention of that recently on social media. What I found from personal experience and watching people, Lulu, watching students, watching colleagues, watching employees, is that it's very easy or relatively easy to learn something new. You know, if you ask me or if Chirag asked me, listen, Binod, you have to learn about Apple podcasts tomorrow. Okay. I'll probably do it. Right. You have to learn Python, software language in the next 1 month. I can do it and I'll probably do it. But if you tell me, Binod, can you be more introvert, or can you be more agreeable, or can you be less outspoken, you know, that's going to be difficult, very difficult for me. So what I found is that aptitude, and if you want to change someone's skills, easier. If you want to change someone's attitude to life or career, very difficult. And most people come to coaching for something on the attitude side and not so much on the aptitude side. So what I found is that some people change, but the change happens, Lulu, between a certain age. As you're becoming an adult, so I know myself, I changed the maximum when I was around 19, 20. I went from being shy, no friends, sitting at home, to being outgoing, networking with clients. And that's purely because of my boss, who was a great mentor at that time. That was my transformation. A lot of people I've seen in my class, you know, youngsters, right, CFA class, they change between 19, 23, 24, after they enter their first job, you know, they meet their first boss, they meet colleagues, they enjoy their work. But then after maybe 25, I'm just giving a rough age, it becomes very difficult to change who you are, right? If you're a jerk, you remain a jerk. For example, if you're a nice guy, you probably remain and die a nice guy, you know. So if executive coaching is normally meant to change someone's attitude towards his colleagues or towards the job or whatever it is, I say, you know what, the ROI is pretty low on that.
What is the main goal of executive coaching? So what are you supposed to do as an executive coach?
So typically, companies will come to you and say, you know what, this guy needs to think more long term, or this guy needs to learn more about conflict management, or this guy needs to work better with his peers, things like this. And not so much in terms of, you know, profits or sales as such, probably. That could be the outcome, of course. So that's what normally executive coaches are hired for, and they're paid gazillions, right, to do that.
But, yeah, I don't know if I agree with you. I mean, sometimes I look at myself when I was in my 20s, I really feel, maybe the values and the fundamentals are still the same. So yes, I was outspoken, as you said, when I was 20. I'm still, fortunately, outspoken today. But like there are other things in me that you can soften a little bit, right? Or you can you can put more fuel on something.
You're right. I should modify what I said earlier. So exactly. So the key word here is exceptional, I think. So you see, for example.
Oh, so you don't think this is okay?
I don't think it is normal. So it's a theory of mine looking at behavior, right? So if you look at people, I think the people who change the most, Lulu, in their 30s and 40s, right? The people who change the most are people, my theory, who have been through a divorce or have had a serious health issue or have just lost a very valuable job, you know? And then it hits them that, my God, they have this eureka moment that, you know, I need to change my, not change my job or change my skills, but change my attitude to life or to career.
Exactly.
But that doesn't happen often. If you look around you, you'll find people who are fired and they go back and get another job and get fired again for the same reason. Or, you know, so it doesn't happen often. Or so, you'd like so to you, believe it.
So you don't want to be an executive coach because you don't feel that people will that you can change people or you can help people change.
Well, you can't change people. People have to change themselves anyway.
Yeah.
That's your job, right? Yes, but it's like saying, what is the best metaphor to describe this? It's like saying, you know what, I mean, you have a rocket sitting for launch on a rocket pad, launch pad, okay? The engine of the rocket is your IQ. I'm putting a very simplistic example. The fuel of the rocket is your passion, your attitude, okay? So you have both things, but what's really critical, what's really missing is the navigation system. So, right? You can have the best fuel, the most powerful engine. I made it up myself. This is trademarked to me. So whenever you mention this, you have to mention the source of this is Binod Shankar.
The real finance mentor.
Exactly. RFM, exactly. It's a real fan. So I said, if your IQ is the, I'm putting it very crudely, of course, if your IQ is the rocket engine, and if your passion / attitude, whatever, right? Is your fuel. The mentor or the coach is the navigation system. So basically, you're coming to me, you're smart, you're ambitious, but you have no idea what to do in life or in career. then we sit and discuss. And I say, you know what? I'll sit with you and coach you and mentor you because I know that you have the right attitude to listen to me. And I know that you have the smarts to make it happen.
So what's next then?
Good question. What's next? So,
do you have a navigation system?
Well, good one. Now, touche. I'm trying to figure out what's next. I do writing. Gulf News National podcasting is going on. I'm quite active, as you know, on the board of CFA Society Emirates as a career services chair. I really like to give back that way, you know, because that way you can affect thousands of candidates and members in the UAE, charter holders and candidates. So I do organize a lot of webinars for those candidates, etc. That's happening. But I'm really looking for my next idea. I think I'm too young to retire, or I should say semi-retire. Right?
I think you have way too much energy to retire anyway.
I know, that's it, man. Maybe I just need to bottle it up and sell it or something, you know, though.
Essence of Binod.
maybe that's the business model, you know.
Switching gears a little bit, you know, you often post on social media about your mother.
Right.
You talk about like growing up, basically with her being a single mom and raising you and educating you and pushing you. So what has that, how has that impacted you? And like, what was, you know, what was little Binod like? And
wow, huge impact in two words. Because like you said, my father left my mother when I was 3. And she was, she had 3 dependents. There was me, there was her mother and her younger brother and a couple of others. And she was earning a negligible salary as a junior lecturer. But fortunately for me, she was a graduate. She was bright and ambitious and quite literate. And she spoke English very well, which 45 years ago in India wasn't that common. You know, so she went to Nigeria with me in 1975. So I grew up in Nigeria. I didn't grow up in India. But going back to what you said, the impact is that, you know, you grow up seeing someone, a single mom in India, not easy. You know, how she was seen by society. But she stood up to it, right? She was stood up to it. She not only stood up to it. What I find amazing is at the age of 38 or something, she uprooted herself from India, went about 5,000 kilometers to a strange land in the middle of Africa. Everything was different, right? I wouldn't have the guts to do it even at her age. And she built a new career and life there for me because she was bothered that if she was stuck in India, low salary, that job, I wasn't going to gain anyway in life. And she was very worried about me. What drives me a lot is, A, I can't let her down. Till today. Because she's invested a lot. I just can't, you know. And B, is that if she can do it, if a woman who is left by a husband, single, in an environment which is not really, this is not US or UK or Australia, right, where people are liberal, open-minded about a woman separated from her husband. If she can survive and basically tell them to get lost, and not only survive, but thrive and emerge as a wealthy, successful, she became a mentor, a speaker, she's written books in the last 20, 30 years, then why can't I, you know? So even now when I go through shit in my life, and to be honest, I don't have much shit in my life, and I'm not trying to, but even when I have issues in my life, right? I think, listen, don't be a wimp, right? I mean, compared to what she went through, this is nothing. So I think I inherited. So, you know, although you like to say that you're a self-made man, I don't think anyone is self-made. But yeah, so going back to your question, a very relevant question. Big role model, big inspiration, massive impact on me.
She inspires you. I mean, I asked you at the beginning what inspires you,
does.
And you said you wanted to do impact and create impact.
Yes.
And I can see now, you know, I mean, she's obviously inspired you as well in many ways. And you've seen her create impact.
I sort of say stay strong and resilient because I think one major effect is this 86-year-old lady who has sort of told me that indirectly, she never said you should be tough or, you know, she doesn't mentor me the way I mentor people. She doesn't give long lectures or anything. But She's, I think, enforced by example. She's enforced by being a model.
But is it about being tough? I mean, you know, you've touched on something. Quite a few people at the moment are losing their jobs. Even in their 40s, they have families, they have commitments and so on. And when you tell them, you know, you have to be strong, I find it very, I don't think it's the right thing to say. It's not even practical. What the hell does that mean? What would you say, you know, to people that are going through this, given your experience in coaching and given your personal experience as well with with leaving a corporate job, with starting something new?
So recall I earlier during this interview, Lulu, I mentioned something called mental toughness. So I got interested in it way back in 2012. And then I went for a training and then I became a licensed user trainer. I learned how to use there's actually a test, psychometric test called MTQ 48. So you can rate people, you can grade people on four indicators: commitment, challenge, confidence, and control. Commitment, challenge, confidence, and control. And people vary. On a scale of 0 to 10, people have different scores. So a person who is scoring something like 7 or 8, 7 or above, can be said to be mentally tough. A person who scores less than 7 can be said to be, we don't say mentally weak, we say mentally sensitive. Now, the fun thing or the interesting thing about this framework is you can A, identify the level of mental toughness by subsector or substrate or whatever, and B, coach that person to develop mental toughness and say, this is the tool you should use. So if you have issues with commitment or challenge or confidence, right? People have issues with public speaking, or some people have issues with negotiating. This is what you can do to get better at it. So again, the methodology says they have seen some improvements in schools and colleges and careers. So it seems to be working. That's one way. So yeah, you're right. You can't just tell someone be tough. That's just vague and meaningless. What you can do is say, by the way, point in the right direction. This is the tool set. Read about it. See what you can absorb the concept. See where you stand and see how you can improve. Now, the improvement is not going to be 100%. It's not going to be massive. But trust me, in some tough times, Lulu, even a 5-10% improvement can make a big difference. What the hope is. Yeah.
And what about, physical activity? Because on Fridays for fun, you do like a 2-hour training session, which you post about. So that's like your idea of fun.
I did it just once. I did it once, which is 1 hour 40 minutes. That is hell.
So that's your idea of fun. I mean, or if you want to, go.
So by the way, on Friday,
instead of going to Ibiza on vacation, you know, you're climbing Mount Elbrus in Russia or something. So clearly that does something to you, right? I mean, and so if someone's like going through a tough time, would you actually recommend physical activity?
So it's an interesting question, you know, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Do you do physical activity because you're mentally tough, or do you get mentally tough because you're doing physical activity, I suppose?
So what
interesting
do you think?
As usual, there's no straight answer, but I'll tell you something, my personal experience, right, which I've never shared with anyone before. So first time, guys, yeah. I used to have this troughs, you know, I won't say depression, but I would get moody. I would get sad. I would get detached. You know, I would sort of become very quiet and not talk to many people and low profile. And then I would go down like this. And then after a few days or maybe a week, I would bounce back. I knew it was happening. I could never control it. I could never manage it, right? I could never do it. It used to happen irregularly. It depends on what was happening, what shit was happening in office, for example, right? And then 2007, 2008, I started running slowly. 2008, I started the cycling. In 2010, I did my first half marathon. 2011, I did my first marathon. And ever since then, I don't have such episodes. I'm not saying like I'm like Buddha, or chilled out and calm, and you know you can say anything and it won't hurt me and I won't react. No,
Sadhguru.
Sadhguru Shankar. That's it. That's my new name. Sadhguru Shankar.
Shankar. Yes.
I got to be careful. There's another Shankar, I think, in India. Anyway, so there's a branding issue there. So go back to your question. I think that, so I've been thinking about it and I said, why, how did I change? You know, and I think I think one reason for the big change was the fact that I started running, I started going to the gym regularly at that point, I started cycling. Suddenly physical health became more important. I started eating right. I think there's a connection between doing all that and being more resilient, more less temperamental, you know. I still lose it some once in a while, of course I do. I still, you know, feel like I need to shoot someone in the head sometimes. but very once in a very blue moon. But I calm down very quickly. And more importantly, Ludo, I can sort of sense it before it hits me. So I think exercise, whatever form, walking, running, swimming, whatever you can do. So just before today's interview, I went out with a backpack in the heat of summer in the gardens in Jebel Ali and did a 75-minute walk with the backpack. I came back and showered, just for you, by the way,
I did a 5-kilometer run as well in the heat, in the Dubai heat, for you, just to be all fresh for our talk.
Just to be on message, all dynamic, yeah.
That's awesome. So do you have any parting thoughts?
So my parting thoughts would be quite a few things, which I mentioned sometime in Mumbai about a few months ago when I was there at the invitation of my students. So one is, you know, every choice has a consequence in life, whether you like it or not, whether it's health or fitness or education or relationship, every choice you make has consequences. So just be careful about the choices you make. Number two is that if you don't know how to make choices, ask. As in, don't reinvent the wheel. Don't struggle on your own. Everything's out there. Google is your friend, right? Number three, very important, I discovered myself, is know yourself. A lot of people don't know themselves. And they think they do, they don't really. And then they make all sorts of mistakes. They get into the wrong job, wrong relationships, whatever. Another very important point, I think, is what I found in my age now, getting into my 50s, I think is happiness is an inside job. No one, money, career, title can only make you happy for so long, right? At the end of the day, you need to feel happy internally because you're connected to something more meaningful, maybe a bigger cause or something.
Are there any books you recommend to people that want to follow your advice? And, are there any tools, books, or resources?
Tons of books. So you can see my bookshelf back, the books I read in the last, 6 months probably.
Give me two books.
Okay, so quite a few topics here, right? Let's talk about career and personality and everything else. So two books, one book is on, if it's career, what got you here won't get you there. It's written by this world famous executive coach called Marshall Goldsmith. Basically, what made you a manager won't make you a leader. And that's a fantastic book to read. It's a very small book, but very well written. And the other book for anyone who is going through issues these days, depression, mental health awareness is a big issue. So one book I loved, by someone who went through the issues, is called Lost Connections by Johan Harry. Johan, J-O-H-A-N-N, Harry, H-A-R-I. It came out recently. He had a TED Talk, very successful. That was on mental health, and he's given a lot of solutions to people, very practical ideas, not drugs, not therapy, but a lot of other very interesting, very sustainable solutions. So yeah, these two books, I think, from the psychological personality point of view, should be quite helpful.
Thank you so much, Binod. I'm sure many people are gonna love this. I loved it. It's so nice to talk to you, really. Very refreshing. I do this, you know, I have the pleasure to do this on a regular basis, so I'm lucky. I think other people get to listen to you, and I would encourage people to also follow you on LinkedIn because you really post some pretty interesting stuff.
Yes.
Thank you so much, Mr. Shankar. It was a pleasure.
It's a pleasure. I mean, it's like having a conversation, like a long catch-up, right, after a long while.
Exactly.
And exactly. I would like to the listeners, so they can connect me on LinkedIn, it's Binod Shankar, or on my website, www.therealfinancementor.com, where there's tons of blogs, book reviews, podcasts, and webinars.
Thank you very much, everyone that's listened to the show. That was Vinod Shankar, a great friend and a podcast host of The Real Finance Mentor. He is absolutely great. I highly recommend you follow him on LinkedIn and on check out his website. Thank you to everyone who's been listening to Conversations with Lulu. That was episode 9. Thank you to everyone who's subscribed, who's rated, who shared the episode and who's listened. I'm super grateful. Our podcast was trending on Apple Podcast as new and noteworthy in the Middle East. So I'm super proud. Thank you very much. And stay safe, everyone. Until next time, take care.